This is the Mountain Muse, and I'm Emmy DeGrappa. Today we are talking to artist and astrophysicist Ed Balbruno. Early in his career at NASA, he had a radical idea about getting to the moon. Today, he's more interested in moving the people who come to see his artwork. Welcome, Ed. Tell us about your work at the NASA Jet Propulsion Laboratory and your book, Fly Me to the Moon.
Before I talk about my work at Jet Propulsion Lab, for those out there, this is not a place for jets. It's the NASA Center for Robotic Space Travel in our solar system. So when you read about the space probes on Mars or the ones at Jupiter and Saturn, those all come from the Jet Propulsion Lab out in Pasadena, which we call JPL. Before I went to JPL, way back in 1986, I was a professor at Boston University and a researcher of theoretical math. And my math was pretty much focused on theoretical issues in a field called celestial mechanics, which has to do with the way things move in space. But from a very theoretical point of view, that had no applications at all. The opportunity came about 4 years into that job where I could go out to JPL and work as what they call a trajectory designer to find a route to Jupiter for the Galileo mission to Jupiter and also the Cassini mission to Saturn, which is there right now and in the news, actually. And that was all planned back in 1986. So that's what I did when I first got out there in 1986. And the group I was in was very exotic sounding. It was called the Outer Planets Group. And they designed trajectories to the outer planets, of which Jupiter and Saturn are one. So my paycheck came from me working on the Galileo mission to Jupiter. And for me, it was oil and water mixing with engineers. I was a mathematician, a very theoretical one at that, where I didn't really care about applications too much. Out at JPL, they're really interested in getting a particular device, a spaceship, to a planet, Jupiter in this case. The spaceship cost $4 billion. So they don't care about theory. They care about getting the job done and getting it right. And I was really interested in doing research. And I found out, unfortunately, this was not a research place, as I was led to believe. So I struggled with my regular job and certainly did it fine. But after being there for a year, they didn't like me too much, and it was mutual. So to make a long story short, and this will get to why what the book Fly Me to the Moon is all about.
Okay.
They took me off of the Galileo mission, and that was around the time that the Challenger had the unfortunate explosion and, you know, that terrible disaster. And when that happened, NASA was looking, you know, when that happens, they look for excuses to get rid of people they want to get rid of. So I was one of them. And they viewed me as one of the, they put it once, they said, you're one of those thinker type people. And that means that's not a good situation to be in an engineering firm. So they put me on a project that was a pet project of the director of JPL at the time, General Lou Allen, who is the director of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, actually, of the United States' Armed Forces before he went to JPL. And he wanted to get a little tiny spacecraft to the moon, have it pop out of a trash can-sized device on the space shuttle. And he was interested in what's the smallest possible spaceship you can get to the moon. And the engines on this one were very small. So they hired me to say, they said, well, you know, you're working on these ways to get things to the moon. Maybe you'd be interested to work on this. And this sort of saved my career at the time. And my boss said, thank you. We have a job for you now. Because he was worried about that. Now, the radical new approach to space travel that I had, and the reason they wanted me to do this, is slowing down a spaceship to get in orbit around the moon without using the engines. Now, prior to this, all the space missions ever launched go back to the work of this German guy in 1920s, Walter Hohmann, and he has a standard route to the moon. It's called a Hohmann transfer. And if you look at it, it looks like a ballistic shot. It's a straight line path to the moon, almost like firing something out of a cannon. And it works very well. The United States used it throughout the Apollo era and many other missions after that. The disadvantage of this is that when you get to the moon on this path, you're going too fast, basically the speed of a bullet. So you have to slow down, use a lot of fuel to slow down. And it's $1 million a pound to bring anything to the moon, including fuel. So if you have to slow down, you have to burn many pounds of fuel. And so, for example, the Apollo mission had to burn about 200 pounds of fuel to slow down. So just to slow down was $250 million. So as a mathematician, not knowing the industry, when I arrived at JPL, I said, well, can't you just let nature slow you down naturally? And that was not a good question to ask. They thought I was crazy, and it put me immediately on the wrong track. So when this job came up, they wanted me to find a way to get around the moon without using the engines, exactly what I was thinking about. In retrospect, I was sort of set up. So they probably figured I would never do it. Now, the guy who took me on for this project gave me 3 months to do this in. There was nothing in the literature. It was completely in left field, and I don't think anyone expected me to do this. So I went to the literature, of course, to double check. Of course, there's nothing about this. So as an artist, because I have a dual life, my other life as an artist. In fact, I did art much younger than being in science, studying mathematics. I did my first oil painting, I think, at 7 years old, and I still hang it. It's a really nice painting. I did a painting, by the way, of a satellite of Jupiter from a ground level, the satellite Titan of Saturn. It was a landscape being on Titan. I did this at 7 years old. So I've always been interested in space. So in any event, when I was given 3 months to do this almost impossible job, and I freaked out. And I said, well, you know, rather than doing it the typical way of just killing myself, going to the notebooks, trying to scrawl something out in math, I'm never going to solve this in 3 months. So I did the opposite, and I let go. I let go of the conscious mind. I said, what I'm going to do instead is I'm going to be inspired the same way Van Gogh was inspired. And I'm going to do a painting of the Earth-Moon system. And maybe when I do that painting, I will see the brushstrokes going from the Earth to the Moon, and it'll give me that solution I'm looking for. Now, no one's ever done that before, and I did it. And after I did the painting, there it was. There was a bunch of brushstrokes. You could see them going right around the Moon. I went to the computer. I took what the brushstrokes were telling me, and you can translate that, if you know some of the business like I do, into an actual numbers for the computer using the simulation computers they have at NASA to see if that's a real orbit. And it really was. It actually worked. The computer gave me a real route to the moon. It got captured around the moon like it was supposed to for no fuel at all. And so I discovered this new way to the moon using a painting. At the time, I didn't make a big deal about this. I didn't even tell anyone at the time I did a painting to find it because they was not acceptable to think that way at a place like JPL.
Sure.
Yeah. It turned out that my finding this route, although it was a brand new route to the moon, it threatened the system because it was done completely different from the way they're used to. It uses chaos theory because it turns out that when you get captured at the moon on one of these trajectories, it's a very delicate capture. It takes a lot longer, too. It took 2 years to get to the moon on my route instead of 3 days. So because of the chaos, because of length of time, they didn't really like it, even though it was actually a big deal from a scientific point of view. So 5 years later, I was politely asked to leave my position. And as I was leaving, there was a knock on my door. After I let go, again, here, I did the opposite. When I got when my job was on the line, 5 years later, again, I did the opposite. When they told me your job is probably done, we're going to take away your paycheck, you're still going to keep your position, but no salary, my immediate impulse would have been panic, freak out, do what I could, try to pull strings from all different directions. I did the opposite again, and this was, don't worry about it, let go of your anger towards these people. I did that 2 months after this happened. The moment I did that, there was a knock on my door, and it was described to me that there was a failed Japanese robotic lunar probe that was lost and never made it to the moon, and the mother craft was going around the moon that it was attached to, and they wanted to rescue the mission by getting the mother craft to the moon. It had no fuel, basically, just a tiny bit. And the guy who asked me this said Japan is desperate to save their mission because it was all over the news that they had failed. And the moment I let go of my anger that I was going to compete with JPL and be all upset they didn't like my work, the moment I let that go was when this guy knocked on my door and tells me this and says, I can't find a way to do it because there's no fuel on the craft. I've heard about your work. I think it's garbage, but I have to try anything. And the moment he asked me, I knew how to do it. Suddenly, the two-year route I found 5 years earlier, I now found a three-month route. And instead of going directly to the moon, it went way beyond the moon and then comes back and got captured for free. So the guy didn't believe it was going to work. So I had some inner knowing it was going to work. He checked it on the computer. Next day, he came in with eyes wide open. He couldn't believe it. And a year after that, Japan hit the engines on that spacecraft, and it got to the moon in October of 1991. That saved their mission, and it saved my career.
Mm-hmm.
So after that, I actually left L.A. I couldn't stand the pressure anymore after all that politics. And I didn't know if my career was going to be survivable or not, but I went to the Midwest and was an artist for 5 years until I ended up in Princeton in around 2000. So my book, Fly Me to the Moon, is about that story.
Oh, that's interesting. You talk about science in such a way that it's not intimidating, especially when you think about the complexity of astrophysics and mathematics. You explain it in simple terms, and I can say, oh, I get it.
Well, I've luckily had a lot of practice. I've given a lot of talks on this, but more recently, this fellow, Jacob Okada, is doing a movie about this whole story and about my life in general. And I've had to learn, working with him, to not get into the issues and sort of boil it down really quickly. And luckily, and through a great opportunity, I'll be giving a TED Talk here in Jackson Hole, Wyoming. And to do a talk like that, I have to say this very succinctly, so I've had a lot of practice.
That's very fortunate for the rest of us. Now, you left California, you went to the Midwest, and you started your art career.
Yes, what happened was when they hit the engines on the Japanese spacecraft in April 1991, and it was on its way to the moon, I took a teaching job after I left JPL, actually, a few months before that. And I went to teach at Pomona College in the Claremont Colleges. In April of 91, I didn't know what I wanted to do, but I knew that Japanese thing was on the way to the moon. The spacecraft was called Haiten, which means a Buddhist angel which dances in heaven. That's the name of the spacecraft, which is very appropriate for this. So in June of 91, I didn't know if I wanted to stay in L.A. or just change my life. And I figured, and I was an artist, and I am an artist, and I figured, well, you know, if this spacecraft successfully gets to the moon in October of 91, then I will have a career after that. It may take a few years after it settles in what happened, but I will have a good career. If it doesn't, I won't have anything. So I said, it's time to take a break. I need a break. So I went with my girlfriend at the time, and we got in my Jeep. I threw my paintings in my Jeep, rented out the condominium my own, and drove to where she lived, was St. Paul, Minnesota. On the way there, I went through Wyoming, Thunder Basin National Grasslands, Casper, and that was the only time I was ever in Wyoming was that trip, and I'm back here now, which is kind of exciting. But I drove to St. Paul, Minnesota with her, and I decided to live in a somewhat abandoned factory building in the middle of St. Paul. And I lived there for 5 years and painted.
Ed, what was inspiring your work at that time?
Well, I was going through a huge change because I was somewhat shattered due to the experience I had at NASA, but I was also elated because the spacecraft had worked. So I was in a very strange set of mind. And also, I was a professor. I was a mathematician and worked as a professor a number of years before the JPL thing when I was had a very prestigious job there. So I was really trying to find out, what am I about? What's going on? I was really struggling with how could it possibly happen that I could single-handedly rescue a space mission using my theory in such a weird way? I was blown away by the whole experience, and I figured I can't even have a normal life until I acclimate to this somehow. So when I went out there, I was open to anything. So what I was painting was, I painted a number of paintings of alien, I call them alien landscapes. They were landscapes of a hypothetical planet of another world. And they were usually ruins. They were ruins of structures and things of that nature that could have existed on that planet, wherever it might be. And I did a number of paintings in that realm. While I was out there, people in the area knew what I was about, and they tried to keep me going a little bit in the science world. They didn't want to see me totally get it detached. So on one occasion, one of the astronauts who walked on the moon, Edgar Mitchell, was visiting town. They arranged for him to meet me, and he named one of my paintings. He really liked my studio, liked the work I was doing. And slowly but surely, I got back into the science world when I left there and went to the New York City area in 1999, because I started a little company. I really had no intentions of getting back into math again. By this point, the Japanese spacecraft had been successful. It got there in October 1991, so it was starting to get in the press. Princeton got interested in my work. I got a phone call from a very prominent senator in Washington who heard about my story, and he said, we're going to get your career back on track. I can't say who it was. A week later, I was standing in the office of the director of NASA, and he said, we're going to fix your career. And from that moment on, I've had a wonderful career.
When you say your career, which career is that? Your career as an artist, a scientist, or a combination of the two?
It's both. What happened was the director of the time, Daniel Golden, he said, you know, we're going to set you up with a contract to actually for up until now, it's been going on, to keep my research going on these unusual routes to the moon. However, he also said, I have your art brochure. He had it with him. And he goes, I'm going to commission you to do a painting for NASA, and I'm personally going to unveil it. And he did. And it's now hanging in their executive collection. So they were doing both for me. Through the funding I've been really fortunate to be having since 1999, it's freed me up to do my art in a way which I never imagined. And now I have a brand new style. It's me. It's extremely explosive, bright colors. And I've had a great deal of success with it in the past 5 years when I went off in this direction. And that brings me out here to Jackson Hole for the TED Talks, the talk about this whole experience. And I think that my experience with NASA way back then with the senator really gave the fuel I needed to get both these careers off ways going I never imagined. My science career has gone way beyond orbits to the moon. I'm now doing research at Princeton, although my basic gravy train, so to speak, is with the federal government with these contracts. So I do research at Princeton on cosmology. I just published a paper recently on a Big Bang of the universe, which is getting some attention. I published a paper last year on the origin of life on Earth, which got mentioned on Time magazine last October. So my work has never gone any better, and it's gone beyond the routes to the moon, but I'm still very active with that. However, my real passion is in art. And I think my story I bring to the table is so unusual for an artist. And also it shows how to use art for science, which is so different. And not just use it for science. This painting I did on the route to the moon has actually made a paradigm shift in the way the world does trajectory design. And NASA just did several missions to the moon using this work of mine. So it's art can not just make an impact, but change the way we do business. It's also impacted the research I'm doing at Princeton on black holes and the Big Bang in the universe. These have also followed from paintings. So I'm getting tremendous insight from my artwork. But I don't do art just for that. In fact, I don't really do it for that reason. I do it because I'm driven to do it. I love doing it. And the paintings I do try to reach into another part of reality. I use color for that, tremendous quantities of color.
What would be your advice to young people who are learning about science and the interaction between art and science?
My advice, if I had to give advice, which I'm good at doing, first of all, that's a good question. I think it's complicated. My advice for young people, I had a good opportunity. I was very, very young at the time, but I grew up in the tail end of the 60s and the 70s. And it was a time when you were rewarded to be different, to have long hair. I'm sorry, parents. To take a year off before you go to college, to investigate who you are, what you're about. To be bold and to dream, to really dream. And I think today, due to the pressures of jobs and the amount of people living in this world, it's very competitive. And people are sort of they're reluctant to even take any time off. In fact, they use the word gap year. The word gap year is itself negative. It means there's a gap in something which is not supposed to be a gap in. I feel there should be necessarily an open year there. So I would say, keeping that discussion in mind, what I just said, if you're a young person and you want to work in art, you can view art as a way to explore science. Because if you really look at the discoveries that are made in science, they're made when you access parts of yourself which are not your conscious mind. They're the parts of you which are tapped into the universe, I'll call it, which is everything. I don't want to get religious here, but the universe is the life force, or the force that controls everything, and has the stars, the galaxies, everything, our life, the lives of plants, animals. That's the universe. If you tap into that, you will get insights that you could never get with your conscious mind. Now, scientists, and I say this from experience, you'll get those insights in the science world, but they don't last for a very short period of time, maybe like a second. But that little second may get you the theory of relativity, or it may get you a jet engine, or it may get you a rocket ship. But they're very tiny little zaps of energy that you get when you tap into this. If you're an artist and you're doing a painting or a sculpture, whatever it happens to be, you're tapped into that not for a second, but for hours, for hours. It's a much deeper experience being an artist. So if you can take that kind of deep experience of being connected with the universe and then bring that to bear on your science world or your math world or your world which requires logical thinking, you will make insights that you could never, ever get if you were not going to be doing that. So I think it's extremely valuable for art, not just because art looks beautiful, because it helps you in your life. It's like doing exercise at the gym. There's no reason why you would really want to do that and for a sight, but it helps you in ways you can't even imagine.
After working as a professor and a professional, what do you think young people should do before choosing a career in college?
I suppose I'll tell it goes with a story. I got my PhD in math from NYU, New York University. So I go to teach at Boston University, and I got it in 1980. So before I went into school to go through my whole math experience, bachelor's, master's, PhD, I was a hippie type. I had the super long hair. I never wore shoes. I wore a fringe jacket. I hitchhiked all over the place. Then I got very serious for like that whole experience of college and graduate school. When I got out, it was like I was in a time machine. So when I went up to BU and started teaching, I noticed the first day I was in class, all the students came in with short hair, with briefcases. And I look at someone, I said, "What happened? What's going on?" I mean, and I really felt that because I was like 10 years just vanished from me. I suddenly realized that life, suddenly everything got very conservative, very competitive. So my advice I tried to give them was try to be a little bit more flexible. But I found that I couldn't do that. I was a product of the system. I found that my job was actually at the time when I was hired in as a professor, I had to teach Calculus 1, Calculus 2, Calculus 3 to all the incoming students. I had to teach business mathematics to nurses, business people. And there was no room to give advice really on that level. I really had to teach a class, and it was very frustrating for me because I could tell that most of the students truly didn't care about the material. They just wanted to get the grades so they could move on. So that idealism that I grew up in, I just found lacking. Now, when I did get advice, when I was in office hours with students, and I would get questions like, geez, Professor Balbirno, I just hear BU. I wasn't much older than they was, actually. I got my PhD at 25, and these students were already 20. So they said, well, you know, what should we do? And I said, well, you know, if you can take time off, do it. So I know some students went off to the Peace Corps and things, and they came back so enriched. I mean, they were just different people. So I would encourage people to explore. Don't necessarily work in a field because you want to make money, which is so driven nowadays. I know the science curriculums are suffering because a lot of American students want to go off in economics and these kind of fields. And it's being filled by Chinese students and students from Asia. They're not taking the research things. So I would say do your dream. If your dream is contrary to what society's saying, fine, just do it.
Do you have a message that you have lived and learned and that you are going to portray in your future?
Yes, I have my message really has to be seen in the context of my talk, which has paintings in it and things of that nature. So I can give sort of my message here, and it's not really taken away from the talk. The message is, if you're encountering a crossroads in your life, lose a relationship, getting divorced, losing your job, whatever it happens to be, and you find yourself going into a state of panic and fear, which is what we're conditioned to do in this world, at least in the Western society, and you're scrambling and your conscious mind is telling you, do this, do that, to sort of be save yourself. What I'm recommending is don't do that. You do exactly the opposite of what you think you should do. And the message I would like to give is, if you're able to do that, because it's so hard to do that, but if you're able to do that, if you see your wife leaving you, if you see your husband leaving you and you're like desperate and you're clinging at the door, or if you lose your job and you're pleading with your boss, you do the opposite. You walk in the other direction and say to yourself, I'm not going to go there. I'm going to be looking to the universe to give me a different path. If you can do that, you will be rewarded beyond your wildest dreams, I guarantee it.
That's a wonderful message. Ed, thank you for talking with us today.
Well, thank you very much. It was a real pleasure.
This is The Mountain Muse, and I'm Emmy DeGrappa.